We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. On radio.com sports station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
You really couldn't have wrote a script any better than how it turned out. I mean, with everything going on in the world, we were able to get some outdoor seating, football that weekend. I think it was Halloween weekend, which made it even cooler. So, yeah, I mean, it was perfect. And, you know, it ended up turning out well. And, you know, I think the unique part about it is everybody, you know, takes out kind of that newspaper ad or does something on Instagram or Twitter or whatnot. And, you know, we just wanted to do something a little different. And I know how Chicago is. They've bought me plenty of drinks along the way.
They don't mind drinking.
That's great.
No. I mean, who doesn't? You know, you kind of need to decompress sometimes. And, you know, so it was just, like I said, it was a perfect storm in all aspects of it, with the places to the people to just how it turned out. I mean, it was an awesome, awesome deal. I'm glad I got to be a part of it as well, just as much as the fans did.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is John Lester on 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C., and he's talking about buying the fans of Chicago a beer on his way out of town. And that was, you know, fantastic promo and a lot of fun to see him do that. And, you know, David, I get it. John Lester's gone. John Lester is a Washington National. But the news yesterday was not good, which is that that he is leaving camp in order to have a thyroid gland removed. We know that John Lester is a cancer survivor. When you hear someone has a thyroid gland being removed, that would indicate that there is a cancer scare going on there. Now, he was very listless and said that he had lacked energy, etc. And that's obviously one of the signs with a thyroid. There is medication that you can take to replace whatever you're missing. And the word was that he'd be out 5 to 7 days. Now, we'll see if he can come back and be ready to go at the start of the season. We don't know how this, you know, I mean, it's all pie in the sky stuff when you talk about it. You don't know how your body reacts, etc. But if John Lester were still here, that would be the news of the day. That would be the story we'd be talking about, because it would affect not just the Cubs rotation, but you'd worry about him as a human being and his health moving forward and all the rest of it. And I just thought that we should give it a second and talk about it for a second out of respect for what that guy did. I feel confident calling him an idol, not just in Chicago, in Boston as well, and in a lot of circles of baseball.
Without a doubt. I mean, there are professional implications, but from a personal level, you just hope everything is okay. When you hear about John Lester returning in 5 to 7 days after having a thyroid gland removed, you start to think, wow, that's fast. It seems like a lot. And you just hope that everything goes well and he recovers. That, you know, he's 37 years old. There was a reason why the Cubs only wanted to pay a certain amount. You know, from a baseball perspective, there was not willingness to go beyond a certain level. And everyone accepted that, if not totally understood it. But you wished him well on his way out because of what he has meant to this franchise and what he's meant to the city. You know, start the debate. He is arguably the best Chicago sports free agent ever. Him and Marian Hossa, that would be a short list. But he is 37. You hope that this isn't a sign of anything more concerning or serious. The Nationals, they have, I think, realistic expectations for John Lester. They want him to be their fourth starter, go five innings. They're paying him $5 million. They want him to be healthy. He's playing for Dave Martinez, who has known him a long time, and every Cubs fan. You're right. If this were a local story, and it still feels somewhat local,
yeah.
But if this were happening with him in a Cubs uniform while he was in Arizona, I think a lot of people would have heightened concern levels this morning, and I think there are a lot of Cubs fans who are just hoping for the best.
And there would be a lot of more angst, I suppose, and a lot more publicity to it were it were he still in Chicago. And don't forget, they were talking to him right up to the point where he signed with the Nationals. They had tried to jump back in there because the contract was probably one they could handle. And at that point, he'd already moved down that road toward Washington. But the Cubs did make a last-minute push for him. So it's not beyond the realm of some alternate universe that he did come back here and that this is kind of one of the big stories of today. I got tons of time for John Lester. Great dude, great guy to talk baseball with. I remember when he first came here going out to Wrigley and had an unbelievable conversation with the guy, the end of which he said, "Have you talked to Rossi? You ought to go over there and talk to him because he's unbelievable talking about baseball. That guy is just loves the game." And now Rossi's the manager. So it's kind of an extraordinary thing that occurred just in my first conversation with the guy where he's recommending, hey, you're looking to talk to someone on the radio, go talk to Rossi. I just found that really fun. And I just have tons of respect for everything he's accomplished in his career. And as you say, David, you wish the person well. You really hope that this is a minor blip and that he is back in 5 to 7 days and that he gets to pitch. And I'll always be a fan of John Lester. I think he's an extraordinary guy, good man.
Even beyond anything he accomplished in Chicago and what he did accomplish with the Cubs is legendary. It does make him an idol forever in this city and for good reason. But even before that, Mully, I think John Lester was a name that for baseball fans it resonated, and he was an easy guy to root for. 2 years after I think he was diagnosed with lymphoma, he started and won game 7 of the World Series in 2007 for the Red Sox. And when you just think about and remember that story and that narrative and what he had to overcome, and he's just a tough guy. He is definitely somebody you pull for and you hope that this is something he can deal with and cope with and return to good health. He was supposed to make his debut for the Nationals today, and that is not going to happen. It's early in spring training, relatively so. Opening day is still about a month away, so you hope that he can return and contribute in a way that they expected him to, and this is just a blip on his season. You wonder how much more he can pitch, but, hey, he's 37. He's been durable. He's given – he's made 31 starts every season, every year since 2008. Let's hope he can return and be as durable as he always has been.
I got to ask you, when Dustin said at the 5 at 5 that Kyle Schwarber is an idol, that Jock Peterson is replacing an idol.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I didn't agree with him for this reason. I think he had a legendary season. I think he, coming back, and I agree with what Dustin's argument was that they don't win it without him. But I didn't see this huge uproar. We didn't have full phone lines because Kyle Schwarber was gone because they opted to let Kyle Schwarber walk. They opted not to bring Kyle Schwarber back. It's different. If a guy's an idol, usually, I guess let me put it this way. There's a part of me, whether this is heresy or not, that believes Jock Peterson is an upgrade over Kyle Schwarber. That believes, wow, they really did get a better option as a player, in Jock Peterson than Kyle Schwarber.
All right.
And I don't want to be cruel about it, but that's kind of how I look at it. And maybe I'm wrong, but I really did think that when it happened.
Defensively, I think you could make that argument. Baseball-wise, let's wait and see how they do offensively. I think it may be just a matter of semantics. You know, I think I can't speak for every Cubs fan, but I know that Kyle Schwarber will always have a unique place in Cubs lore because of what he did in 2016, because of coming back. You miss a season, you make the comeback. That is a tale that is legendary in Cubs history. Think of it this way, and you can think of it any way you want to, but if I say the name to you as a Sox fan, Scott Podsednik, what do you think of? You think, boy, I think a lot of people.
What a year. Yeah.
What a year. What a moment, right? What a moment in the World Series. Scotty Podsednik will always be special to the Sox fan in a way that I think Kyle Schwarber always will be considered an idol or a legend or whatever word you want to use to Cubs fans because of that way, the way that he delivered when they needed it most. And he was part of something that was magical. And I think that always will give him, you know, a place that is unique in your memory as a Cubs fan. So that, I think, is what he was alluding to. And as it pertains to Jock Peterson, you might be right. And I think they're very similar. Defensively, yep. I think Peterson is probably better.
And I mean, I'm not dissing Kyle Schwarber, but I mean, he was Paul Bunyan. Don't get me wrong. He went up there with the axe, and it was extraordinary what the guy did in that year. But he was significantly younger in his career than Scott Podsednik was. Scott Podsednik was a veteran player that the White Sox brought in, and he really delivered and was part of an extraordinary group. But you didn't feel like you had watched him grow up. You had seen him come in, and there was these hints of this mythological sort of a figure. And I think that with Schwarber, the happily ever after wasn't there, right? So while it was an extraordinary season, you know, it wasn't very long before he was struggling and sent back down and then came back. It just, I don't get the same sense of kind, like, you know, Scott Podsednik, he did what he did here, and then that was kind of that's how he'll be remembered, because he's a figure in time. With Schwarber, he did what he did. It was extraordinary, you know, putting the baseball on the scoreboard, all that stuff. Then it ended, and then it got ugly, and then it got okay, and then he left, and then, wasn't that great the 1 year? You see what I'm saying? It's not that kind of fairy tale. It doesn't have the happily ever after. It's a different type of fairy tale.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think I agree. I think that, you know, the happily ever after that is similar with Podsednik. They both have World Series rings, and they both have unique moments in Chicago baseball history. Schwarber, maybe people invested more over time because he was a draft pick and he was part of a movement and you know, kind of a resurgence with the Cubs, and maybe he failed to meet those expectations, so he no longer is here. But I think that 15 years after the White Sox World Series in 2005, you remember Podsednik in a fond way, in a legendary way, because of that moment, because of what he was part of. And I think in 15 years, you know, in 2031, when we reflect back on Kyle Schwarber, I don't know what it's going to be that he left town and, you know, amid some disappointment.
Right.
I think it'll be different than that.
No, I'm not arguing that idea. I'm just saying, I think that with Schwarber, In a weird way, David, and I mean, I'm going to get in trouble for this, so get ready to start reading some text messages. But in a weird way, he became representative of, you know, he and kind of, you know, Addison Russell became representative of, you know, the Cubs on the verge, greatest players in the game. They're going to be winning title after title. Uh-oh, that guy's career has gone the wrong way. And with it seemed to go their World Series hopes and dreams. It, you know, again, he could not sustain what he managed to do as a moment in time. You are absolutely correct, will be remembered forever. But because he couldn't sustain it, it was almost like they couldn't sustain. And it wasn't just him. As I said, there were other guys in a similar fashion. But he, maybe more so than others, because of the contribution that he made. And because you don't win that thing without him. And, you know, I mean, let me ask you this. is Aroldis Chapman going to be remembered for that glorious season? And does he become, you know, an icon or an idol, whatever word you want to use, because of one season? Or was he a guy that came through town, you know, contributed, but then was gone? And I know it's different with Kyle Schwarber, but I hope that he has another chapter of his career, Schwarber. He's still a young man.
I hope he does, too. I hope he does, too, because he's got a lot of fans still here. 219 Texter says, the Cubs lost my loyalty when they got rid of Kyle Schwarber. I am now in the process of buying a Nationals jersey with his number.
That's
good. So that's good. You know, I think everyone's niche in Cubs history will be unique off that team, just like it is with the White Sox in 2005. Chapman, good question, good point. He's a baseball mercenary who made everything possible. You know, that is the way that I will remember Aroldis Chapman. A lot of controversy, a lot of consistency. He was the guy who got them to the point where the magic happened. And you can talk about the way he performed in the World Series and Rajai Davis and all these things that come with
sure.
All the baggage that accompanies his name. But without his name, you're not celebrating, I don't think. So that's kind of his legacy. And Kyle Schwarber's – every member of that team has a unique legacy, Mully. And you're right.
Sure.
Schwarber, to some degree, in the context of now, is a symbol – of the disappointment that era sort of represented, the 85 Bears aspect of the 2016 Cubs, because they didn't win more than just that one. But I think over time, that will change, and we will remember Kyle Schwarber more fondly than maybe some people do right now.
And I'm not suggesting that we won't. I think, like I said, I think that, you know, to me, John Lester has idol status and always will. But John Lester has the consistency of career that makes him, whether anyone believes that he is or not, a Hall of Fame candidate because of what he did in the postseason and because how he did it for these teams that had been up against the wall and never seemed to be able to break through. And for what he represented when he came to the Cubs, that was the first kind of big money ticket guy that you got to buy on to your plan. You know, John Lester, when he showed up, he did not need the Cubs as much as they needed him. And he helped to create something that you know, obviously ended an unbelievable drought of championship. And he was a huge part of that. And I think that, you know, again, Aroldis Chapman was a part of that. The Schwarber thing, that, you know, Schwarber, like Chris Bryant, you thought you had one of these guys that was going to last forever, and now here we are. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, it just makes me wistful when I think about young players whose careers you thought were heading in one direction, and then now they're, you know, one guy's out of town, the other guy will find out. But you think about how hard tooth and nail the Cubs fought to maintain this year with Chris Bryant, and now look what this year has become. I think it's just, you can't help but get a little kind of just feel bad about the whole thing. You know, the relationship was affected by this year that you had to have, and look at this year. It's just been an awful
2021 year. Is not what we envisioned it would once be when we were talking about the futures of all these guys who were coming up at the same time and all of the hand-wringing and infighting with, oh boy, you have to preserve that extra year of control. And well, all you have done was you have gotten the extra year of control over Chris Bryant, so you want to trade him at the All-Star break. I mean, Jessica Mendoza yesterday was talking about she'll be shocked if Rizzo, Baez, and Bryant are all Cubs on August 1st. Really? I mean, would you be shocked?
I think I'd be more shocked if they were all under contract for next year by then with the Cubs, wouldn't you?
I guess that would be a pleasant surprise. You're right. Yeah, I guess there would be a level of shock, but I just don't know how easy it's going to be to unload these guys because they may be in contention. And if you get rid of these guys when you're in contention, boy, that is going – you talk about leaving a mark. That would leave a mark.
All right, we've got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How would you describe Zach Davies' training camp debut as he pitched two innings with no hits or walks and two strikeouts? Do you understand the comparison to Kyle Hendricks? Are they way too much alike?
Yeah, that's the fear that you have. You have Kyle Hendricks and Kyle Hendricks light, and if you pitch them one after the other, that's going to make it easier for opposing teams. Yeah, I like what I saw with Zach Davies. I like guys that don't have overpowering stuff but know how to pitch. And I think that, you know, the professor, more than anybody, is all about knowing how to pitch. I mean, my God, it's extraordinary to watch that guy work. He is an artist, and he gets his share of strikeouts. It's not like he can't strike anyone out, but what he's all about is kind of forcing contact and bad contact, and that means you're going to rely on that defense. And, I like him a ton. I think very highly of Kyle Hendricks. I wonder if it aids him having some fireballers around him and being able to come in and do his thing after a team has seen something different the day before. I wonder if that helps. And I do wonder how a team is going to be able to handle seeing that type of pitcher a couple times running, if indeed that's the way that this goes down. But, you know, just physically, it's funny to see a guy like Zach Davies, because he doesn't look like this overpowering kind of person, this athlete that's going to, you know, really just mow down the opposition lineup. I think he probably will fool some people for a while walking around Chicago until you get a sense of who he is. And, I think he's a good pitcher, and I like that comparison. And I personally think both these guys are going to have a pretty good year. I think it's those aren't the guys I'm worried about. I think the worries begin after that. Can Millsy do it again? Can he provide consistency from one year to the next? We saw him do it for a year. We saw the guy capable of throwing a no-hitter. Got a lot of help, but that's the kind of no-hitter he was going to throw. But, you know, I was impressed with Zach Davies. I thought he did a really good job, and it was fun to kind of watch that kind of guy pitch. I really do enjoy the sort of everyman aspect of it, even though what they do is extraordinary. It's just the, you know, they don't walk around looking like they're bursting out of their jersey, Jimmy Cordero.
Yeah, 6 feet, 180 pounds, a guy you could pass in the produce aisle and never guess that he was a professional athlete. You know, if Kyle Schwarber is the professor, I mean, Zach Davies looks like the faculty chair. He looks like a guy who's very comparable. And it is a common question that we've kicked around, and a lot of people have mentioned that. You know, is he too similar to to Kyle Hendricks? And each time I hear that, I think to myself, well, I hope so. For the Cubs' sake, I hope he is very similar to Kyle Hendricks, because if they get that guy, then that is a very effective 1-2 tandem. No matter how similar they are in terms of velocity or approach or how methodical they could be, because that's what yesterday it looked like to me, was that this is going to be a methodical starter, somebody that we have seen a lot over the years pitch for the Brewers, and yet last year was for the Padres. His season last year was very comparable to Kyle Hendricks' year, and I think that is what you forget maybe in not really looking at who you got, because we've been talking so much about their style. The substance is pretty good. I mean, he has done something, you know, we don't overstate the value of wins with starting pitchers, but Zach Davies has won 17 games in a season. Kyle Hendricks hasn't done that. You know, that's in 2017, he was 17-9. So I think these are things. He's a professional pitcher. He legitimizes your rotation at the top of it. He could be your number two starter. It's up to the Cubs to surround those two guys with guys who maybe are more different. But I want Zach Davies to be as similar to Kyle Hendricks as possible, because that means you're getting a consistent starter.
A pick six to end the half!
Tony La Russa said he would do whatever necessary to avoid shortening games or innings through March 13th, while Cubs manager David Ross came down on the other side of the debate, citing the, quote, wear and tear on pitchers especially. Do you think this issue rises to the level of controversy in spring training or much ado about nothing?
It probably passes for controversy early in spring training because there's very little else to debate or to wonder about because it is so early. I liked that Tony La Russa, you know, had the fans in mind and he was being very diplomatic and making the case just as much as I respected where Rossi was coming from. You know, we talked about this yesterday. I personally think that these are paid practices for people to watch. I don't want to deprive anybody of their time at the ballpark. But, boy, those days are long, regardless of how many innings, how long did that Cubs game take yesterday. So I get it. You don't want to overtax. And there are things that you're going to be missing. But it's through March 13th. It's not going to be forever. This is a temporary thing. And I would think if I had to check a box between those two, many controversy or much ado about nothing, I would check much ado about nothing.
Would my horse be as fast as your tongue? That's a quote from Much Ado About Nothing. So I thought I would just quote some Shakespeare rather than
it's a fast
answer
horse.
The question. Yeah, that's the point. All right, so everything when you think about everything that's going on with the spring training thing, I mean, the very fact that Dan Bernstein feels that it's silliness and nonsense makes me want to dig into it and talk more about it. I think that it's kind of bizarre, the 20 pitch thing. It's just I get it. They post it and everybody knows going in, or at least they're supposed to read that the inning can end abruptly. It's still weird to watch, and I still think that if Jose Abreu comes up with the bases loaded, let's see that at bat. I don't care how the opposing pitcher is doing. I think there's value at just being up in situational baseball. So I like when you play an inning out. You know, look, these games are 5 innings, 6 innings, 7 innings. It's just bizarre. We talked about how long that Cubs game went yesterday, and you don't want four-hour games. I get it. But, I mean, what else are you doing? It's kind of fun to watch. I think you need to practice situational baseball, too. I like it when games have, you know, I like it when I like it when they don't emphasize that it's practice. Because I like to pretend that I'm actually engaged in it, and I like to look for the different situations. And, oh, this is a scoring opportunity. How are they going to do with two outs? Oh, you mean it's over? Why is everyone leaving? I don't want that to be my preparation for the season. But, look, I mean, it's practice, and no one cares, and I'm not gonna sit here and complain about it. I just don't have the heart to. But I like that there's any kind of controversy, even something as stupid as this.
Who's number 85?
Pick six! Wow!
Given that GM Ryan Pace has declared
everything's on the table
regarding the quarterback position, if the Bears open the season with Nick Foles as the starter, will the offseason have failed? What's the answer to the same question if it's Mitch Trubisky?
I gotta tell you, you know, you can't come out and say that we have everything but the quarterback, and we are going to focus on that, and we're going to fix the quarterback, and everything we have we're putting into the quarterback, and then open the season with the same guy that you benched a year ago. Okay, he was injured, and then you benched him, and then he came back from injury, and guess what? He was benched. I think it's a failure of the offseason. I think they have to do something. I think it's the focus of the entire offseason is you got to get better at that position. It must improve. You know what? We're going to try this guy again. I can't see that being something that fires up the fan base. Now, you got to get different. You got to do something. You can't give all the words to that at your ridiculous news conference to announce that we're not doing anything. What are you going to do? Have another right before the season? Well, we did nothing. You should have seen it coming when we did nothing at the end of the year. I think they need to do something. I think it will feel like a failure if Nick Foles is the starter. And I hate to say it, but maybe I'll feel a little bit different if it's Mitch. But I doubt it. I think I've seen enough of Mitch and I've seen enough of Nick, and I want to see something else. That's just me.
Of the two choices, I would vote in favor of Mitch Trubisky only because of you saw at the end of last season. I don't think that's realistic. I think it's possible because everything is on the table. And if everything is, you have to, as we keep saying, you have to leave the door ajar a little bit just for that possibility. That said, look, if you are going into week one with either of these two possibilities as your starting quarterback, week one is going to feel like the 17th game of the 2020 season. And you don't want that to be the case. You've got to be different. Now, I'm not all going to go all Kyle Brandt on you on Good Morning Football and think that Ryan Pace is something up his sleeve, big, bold, and dangerous. And I don't know that I have that much faith in the front office to be – they know something that not everyone else does, and they're going to pull it off, because I don't think that's the case. But I do think they're going to have to be committed to some sort of change for the sake of change, if nothing else. So I hope that neither scenario comes to pass. But if it does, boy, that is going to be way, way too familiar.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Raiders GM Mike Mayock told ESPN he would pound the table for QB Derek Carr alongside coach John Gruden, pretty much ending any speculation over Carr's future. But does Mayock's loud comment mean Marcus Mariota is even more in play? Who would you prefer if you're Ryan Pace, Mariota or Sam Darnold?
Well, I think that's an easy one for me in terms of the Mariota or Darnold. Darnold is younger and was drafted, you know, the same as Mariota. Their draft status not that different. But I think Mariota's experience and his fit for this specific coaching staff would be much better. I don't know if that means that this qualifies Darnold from having maybe a better future down the road. But you have to win now, and you have to have as many things that are certain about 2021 as possible. And if you ask me who's bound to have a better year in 2021, Darnold or Mariota, I don't think there's any question. It's Marcus Mariota. So that would be the one I would be fixated on. Yeah, if Mike Mayock and John Gruden are pounding the table and they are committed to Derek Carr, that's great for Derek Carr. I don't know that it means anything to Marcus Mariota. Figure out the poison pill in his contract. Let's make a deal. Go into your draft capital if you must. But Mariota, to me, would be a higher priority than Sam Darnold.
Yeah, you know, I'd take either guy. It sounds good to me. I like the idea of one of those two. I think I'm fascinated at the idea of Darnold, just because the reason they're letting him go has really nothing to do with him. It has to do with them and the situation they're in. So you got a new GM, you got a new a coach, and you decide you're going to get, you know what we ought to do? We got the second pick. Let's get a new quarterback. And then we can kind of restart everything, and we'll get back to the beginning of this guy's career being our window to win, because you're still on that rookie deal. Whereas with Sam Darnold, he's got one more year, and then you have to make a decision on whether you – the Mitch decision, let's call it, whether you're going to give him the offer to keep him for the final year, which is going to jump up. So I think if the Bears get him, automatically that second year would kick in. It would be a two-year deal, and it would be a reasonable price for a quarterback over 2 years. You would get 2 years to kind of investigate him, to look at him and figure it out. The Mariota thing, conversely, is a little bit different. You would get him to be your starter, so he would cost you basically $20 million. But the doubling of the contract, the 10, whatever, it's 21, 22 million, the 10 or 11 would count against the next cap, not this cap. So it wouldn't really harm you that much this year. And you've got to obviously try to win in the right now. And then you'd have to pay the pauper after the fact. And hopefully the cap goes back up by then, so it would be a little bit of a wash. So I think you can make an argument for either guy. I think you got to kind of wait a little bit here. Now, I don't know how many suitors there are for these guys, and I don't know how many people are fascinated or interested in it. But as you inch toward that draft, there are more teams that are going to be trying to move up in the draft or trying to make their commitment to some new younger player, and that could leave you an opportunity. There also could be dominoes that fall if indeed somehow you see the quarterbacks fall free, be it in Seattle or Houston or Vegas or wherever. So you almost have to sit chilly a little bit and not jump into this thing as much as you might want to until you see who's available. I doubt any of them are, but it's just due diligence.
Pick six.
The Blackhawks play 11 of the next 15 games against the top three teams ahead of them in the Central Division. In their last 19 games, only the Maple Leafs have more points than the Hawks. Out of a possible 30, how many points will the Hawks get out of the crucial upcoming 15-game stretch?
Not a ton. I don't have a ton of faith in them. I think that the three-game stretch against Tampa, I think that's tough. I think that's a really good team. I think when you start picking teams apart, you know, would you be satisfied if they could get – I don't think they're going to get more points than they're not going to get, in other words. So if it's 30 points at stake, I think they're more likely to get 14 than 16, if that makes any sense. Now, if they can keep it to that sort of close a margin, I think they're going to have a successful season and they're going to be fine. But I would say I'd be more likely to vote 14 than 15, and I'd be more likely to think they could get kind of, you know, 10 to 12 than I would to think they could get in the 20s.
This is where Kevin Lankinen emerges as the guy that for the Calder Cup conversation, and this is where you need him to be the goalie consistently that we have seen at times, you know, throughout the first half of this season. So it's a very tough challenge. We'll learn a lot about the Blackhawks. I think this is the tread water phase of your ice hockey season for the Blackhawks. Can you tread water on ice? I don't know, but that's what the Blackhawks, I think, have to do. Try to get, you know, 7 victories out of this next stretch, 7-7-1, that'd give you 15 points. That would be really ideal. Ideally, you'd like to be in the 20s. You'd like to be as hot as you have been. I don't think that's realistic,
no,
given the style of play and the caliber of opponents. So I would think that 15 points, you would take that. And if they are there, they're in fourth place in the division right now. If you get 15 points out of your next 30, you're headed to the playoffs.
Can you believe this? Pick six.
Did Bulls rookie Patrick Williams get snubbed from the Rising Stars game during All-Star Weekend? Considering Williams has started all 32 games and averaged 10 points while regularly guarding the opponent's best wing player.
Well, the most provincial easy answer is absolutely he got jobbed and he should be on that team. But I think that may be, you know, putting blinders on a little bit. He has had a really productive first half of the season. Started every game, 10 points a game. He's been as consistent as you could expect and hope for a 19-year-old making that transition. That said, I don't know any player that is undeserving. You go through the list, and these are some really talented players around the league. Keldon Johnson, maybe, but he's a guy that, you know, with the Spurs has had a very strong year. I just don't know where you could find a player that is an obvious kind of guy who was added and didn't deserve it. There's some good debates there, but nothing stands out. Patrick Williams, I love the way he takes everything in stride, and this is just another one of those things he'll have to just take in stride.
I gotta tell you, can you really believe that a guy was a really good draft pick and he doesn't still qualify for the Rising Stars game? I think he was a great pick, and I really like the kid, and I think there's a lot of upside and a lot of positivity going on. But I can't call him snubbed. I can call him snubbed. That's not that hard. I just can't get mad about it. I'm kind of happy that he's not playing in that game. I don't think any of this stuff should be going on, frankly. I'll be watching it, no question about it, and I'd probably be more likely to watch it had he partake in it. But I don't feel like it's a problem and he's not there. And I do think he's been a great first-round pick. I think it shows you their thinking, the kind of player they value, the team element of it. And I feel great about his future, but I'm, you know, okay, he's not on the team. It doesn't bother me at all. It's not the sort of thing that I would, you know, I think the Bulls have gotten to a point where they're a little bit better, where you're not, like, constantly demanding respect. Why don't you respect it? I think it's fine. I don't have any problem with it. And yet, I think he was a very valuable pick. I think they got the right guy. So it's weird that those two things can operate at once. But it's not about scoring totals and doing whatever. It's about him fitting into a team concept. And you can see him getting better. You can see him being a big part of it moving forward. And I'm fine with that. So weird that I would respond that way, but there you have it. 312-644-6767. That's the number. It's Mullion Hall on the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I've got great feedback. Now I've kind of switched my stance. I'm kind of catching on a knee almost all the time now. So that's a little bit different. It's new for me, but it felt good in the first two games that I caught. Had a couple good blocks. Throwing feels great. I'm getting nothing but positive feedback, so it's been good so far.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is Zach Collins. He had a nice game yesterday, hit a home run, and he is the backup catcher slash designated hitter for the Chicago White Sox. Although when Tony La Russa was asked, hey, if Andrew Vaughn's not the designated hitter, who will it be? His response was, well, you know, we've got a lot of options. We got Gavin Sheets, and we've got Jake Berger, and you were kind of like, huh? What about those backup catchers? Wouldn't those be the guys that you're looking at for that position? Apparently, they're actually in competition for the backup catcher spot. So if this guy's going to make the team, turn some heads, you know, hit some home runs, and let's see how that works out. Pretty fascinating, David. Yesterday, Tuesday, Cespedes worked out in Florida for 11 Major League Baseball teams. Two of them were from Chicago. Both the Chicago Cubs and the White Sox were at that workout, and ostensibly he is an outfielder, right? And we know he's got a cannon of an arm, but he also has had some really bizarre injury problems. He opted out last year, so he didn't play last year. And in 2019, he was attacked by a wild boar. Is that what the story was? He had a wild boar incident, and it messed up his ankle and had some issues and could not play in 2019. So we haven't seen him. He's 35 and hasn't played since, 2018. And when you hear from people talking about him, while the Cubs went down there and looked at him, he's not considered really an outfielder at this stage in his career. He would be more a DH. Is that something that, if you're the White Sox looking at him, would you be thinking about him as an outfielder, or would you be thinking about him, you know, we could use a 35-year-old DH if he still has some power left?
Maybe. I think you're probably more interested in his brother than you are a 35-year-old his younger brother is already part of your organization. I don't know that you want to necessarily overstep or overreact and go signing him at this point. All the things that you have done and said to this point are you know, Andrew Vaughn is a designated hitter. Now, Cespedes would take at bats away from Vaughn. He would give you protection. Maybe you keep an eye on him. Maybe he remains unsigned. I don't know what other teams are thinking. I wouldn't be interested in him with the Cubs, because I just don't think that he could play the outfield anymore.
Right.
But he's somebody who, yeah, you go to the workout, you see what he's got, and then you file that away. But this is the time when you have to see what you have in terms of your young hitters and young talent. And on consecutive days, as you point out, we saw Zach Collins homer yesterday, Andrew Vaughn the day before. And Andrew Vaughn, you know, if this is the direction that they're headed, if this was what was part of their thinking in the offseason as they resisted pursuing or overspending for veteran free agent designated hitter types, then you got to carry it through and you've got to see what you've got and you have to let him, you know, get the opportunity. The question about Vaughn isn't necessarily is he ready for this, because everyone thinks that he is, and in this early eye test he has passed. How much, if at all, I guess this is a refreshing thing, but is service time not part of the conversation when it comes to Andrew Vaughn? Do you worry less about that because you have identified this as a World Series or bust type of season? And are these concerns that we would typically have about an up-and-coming rookie no longer part of the conversation, which would be a welcome, you know, subtraction in terms of that, you know, nobody likes to talk about service time.
I you know what? I think service time is going to be a huge part of the next CBA. the upcoming bloodbath, as we call it, after this year is over. They've got to get back and they got to figure all this stuff out. And we know that Chris Bryant went through this. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show, in terms of, you know, how hard you fought for this year of him and where you're at with him now. I think the very fact that that you're not worried about Michael Kopech, who I believe the clock reset when he missed the second year, that you're not worried about Garrett Crochet, and maybe most of all that you're not worried about Andrew Vaughn. I think that underscores the win now aspect of these White Sox. They are trying to win right now. If you didn't know that by seeing them hire a 76-year-old manager who you figure probably isn't going to be here for 10 years, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That's what Jerry asked at the interview process. I think that I think it underscores they're trying to win right now, and I like that aspect of it, David. I like that service time isn't a consideration with Andrew Vaughn, that it's going to come down to whether he can hit, not whether you need to save him or you need to worry about a contract. It's about this year. Who helps us this year? How do you get better this year? And anybody that you feel can be a contributor, service time's thrown out the window. That's kind of the way it really should be in baseball. It shouldn't be this plotting that goes on like we heard from the Seattle Mariners. It should be that the guy, you know, best man up, right? That's the idea. If you're the best player, then you are the one that's here. And that's all you want. That's all you want as a fan.
And the adjustments or delay in the minor league season, which has been pushed back to May 4th, just it magnifies it even more. The Sox have, they would have no explanation. They have no rationale to start Andrew Vaughn at the developmental, you know, camp at Schaumburg if, in fact, you know, he's got a month before he would be able to see any live pitching at the minor league level. So it forces their hand to some degree. That said, I think there probably will be some teams that still are, you know, reacting and responding with service time in mind. I hope the Sox follow through, because it wouldn't make any sense to say what they've said about Vaughn, see what they've seen, and go for it this year. And then, oh, by the way, we're going to invoke this silly service time issue. And it would be incompatible with the way of thinking. So I hope they don't backtrack, and I hope that it goes the way that you just described.
Did you see yesterday Dallas Keuchel was talking about Jimmy Lambert? This is another young pitcher for the White Sox, another young player. Now, I want to say Jimmy's got to be like 20, 25, 26. I don't think he's that young, because he did suffer the Tommy John. He had to go through that surgery. He came back. You thought he was going to be a contributor a year ago and the abbreviated season, and he strained his forearm, I believe, in one of his first appearances, if not the first or second. So that's another example of a guy who the clock hasn't reset on. And Dallas Keuchel came out and said that he's like his favorite young pitcher, and he predicted that he can really help the White Sox. That's the guy that he's predicting will be someone that maybe people aren't talking about, but that could really help this team. And I love that idea. I love the idea that, you know, that you've got other pitchers. You know, you could argue, David, at the time, I believe this is accurate, but I don't want to be nailed down to it, but I think that Dane Dunning and Jimmy Lambert shared an apartment in Chicago. They were like roommates, and they were both on the same track. And the thinking was that Lambert might be better than Dane Dunning. And then obviously Dane Dunning was the guy that was healthier and got to come up and got to make the bigger contribution at the end of last year. And they moved a very good young pitcher in order to get Lance Lynn in here. And we'll see Lance Lynn today, but Lambert still a part of it, and his brother Peter is a pitcher for the Rockies, and Jimmy still waiting for his turn, but apparently healthy, pitching, and a big favorite of Dallas Keuchel. Isn't that nice that Dallas Keuchel said good things about him?
It was nice, yeah. Dallas Keuchel's a good teammate, excellent leader, and you mentioned Dane Dunning being Jimmy Lambert's roommate. Dane Dunning, which was your favorite of the 15 pitches he threw against the A's? Do you remember that outing that everyone wants to forget? Good luck to him down in Texas. He's the reason Lance Lynn is here. and looking forward to see what Lance Lynn has to offer. You know, Jimmy Lambert is an interesting prospect, though, Molly, because of the injury. You kind of forget about him, but he does have the good bloodlines. His brother has been, you know, pretty good up-and-coming pitcher with the Rockies. And to hear Tony La Russa, who knows something about what a starting pitcher looks like, refer to Jimmy Lambert as a future fixture in the White Sox rotation speaks volumes. And I think that you forget, because all our attention's focused on the Kopechs and the Ceases and Rodon is back in the top end of that rotation. Young guys like Jimmy Lambert have a chance. You know, also, we talk about Crochet. We almost often forget the second-round pick, Jared Kelly. The Sox have a deep, deep system full of really strong arms, not only in the bullpen, but starting options down the road. They're positioned well to not only succeed, but ideally sustain that success.
312-644-6767. It's Molly and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.